Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Arun Venugopal. Journalist Carlos Maza has had a complicated relationship with YouTube.
Last year, I went through a huge spat with YouTube very publicly and drew the ire of a bunch of really prominent right-wing YouTubers, and that triggered a bunch of death threats against me and my family, but also against my employer.
His employer at the time was Vox, where he was a video producer and media critic for the series Strike Through. Carlos, who politically identifies as a socialist, was targeted for a long time by a conservative YouTuber named Steven Crowder. Crowder made videos mocking Maza for being gay and Cuban-American. Last year, Carlos called out YouTube for its handling of hate speech, opening a national conversation about the platform's policies. Now Carlos is starting a new and surprising chapter of his story. He recently left Vox and decided to run straight into the belly of the beast. He'll be bringing media criticism to YouTube as a full-time content creator there. And he says he'll work from the inside to combat the misinformation and hate that runs rampant in corners of the YouTube world.
It's not some, like, very heroic thing. I'm just deeply concerned about the future of political discourse in a democracy. And I think up until this point, the growth of the far fringe right on YouTube has been a problem that's not been taken seriously enough, both by independent progressive actors and by news media more broadly.
I sat down with Carlos to talk about what he hopes to accomplish with the move. And I asked him to start by painting us a picture of the kind of person and message he's trying to counter with his YouTube presence.
There's this genre of right-wing YouTuber that is defined largely by, like, a hostility towards what they see as political correctness, hostility towards multiculturalism, hostility towards leftist kind of identity politics, and then there's a fear, suspicion of immigrants, there's a fear, suspicion of feminism, the types of things that you'd expect in a corporate HR meeting. There's lots of hostility towards that. And then in terms of, like, style, I'd say the things that unite them is, like, kind of like an authoritarian speech mode. So, like, no sense of vulnerability or weakness, no uncertainty in their speech, condescension or hostility towards other ideas, and a kind of rapidity of speech. There's, like, a kind of speed and brutality with which they speak that's, like, I think is meant to, like, engender this idea of, like, a tough guy or a strong man. It's like a very persuasive kind of avalanche of certainty that marks not just right-wing speakers, but all kinds of speakers on YouTube. The platform itself is kind of like an authoritarian platform because it rewards those who speak with confidence directly to an audience with no conversation, and so kind of lends itself to demagogues.
It actually, the algorithm specifically rewards those attributes?
It's not the algorithm. It is the nature of the platform that it was designed to be a place that privileges authenticity, quote-unquote. This idea that what you're getting on YouTube is this authentic, direct speaker-to-audience interaction, which is unlike a CNN, which you kind of recognize immediately that is filtered through a whole bunch of lenses and has
this
to work
side versus that side,
right? And
balance.
Also, I'm a journalist. I'm separate from the conversation. Yeah. Here's a reporter who's talking to someone else on the field. YouTube, you the individual are being spoken to, which is a naturally kind of like an authoritarian relationship. I'm telling you what to think. I'm telling you what's going on. I am showing you the evidence. You do not talk back to me. There's no one else here. I'm not answering to anybody else. That lends itself very well to demagogues, both on the left and the right.
So you're stepping into YouTube, you just launched sort of like this curtain raiser kind of video and introduction. Who do you imagine your audience will be?
The biggest difference is they're much younger than people who would be, like, on a cable news or who might be subscribing to the New York Times. So a younger audience, politically curious, but not watching TV, so not obsessed with the TikTok of what's happening in the news cycle and the way sort of an avid Fox News or CNN viewer might be interested in. I would think they are politically progressive, though, in the same way that I think a lot of teenagers are, in that they have a kind of empathy for others and a curiosity about the world and an anxiety about the climate, maybe, but are not, you know, they're not reading Chomsky. They're not, like, Marxist. They're not baked into theory, which I think, sort of weirdly enough, is very similar to the audience that the alt-right is aiming for on YouTube. People who are politically curious, but not that interested, people who are not reading a bunch of political theory, who are relatively young and are kind of open to persuasion. The alt-right is very good at capturing that group, especially younger men and younger white men. And there is still, despite people's best efforts, a sort of a gap on the left there. So there are a lot of, you know, leftist literary critics, but not a lot of, like, explicit leftist political content creators on YouTube still.
What do you think is sort of responsible for that void?
I think the rise of the YouTube right is a byproduct of the failure of the right, for the most part, to penetrate into mainstream media. So, like, The Blaze and The Daily Wire and Breitbart have invested a good amount of resources in developing YouTube shows because they recognize that it's got a kind of a low barrier to entry and this incredibly powerful technology to reach a bunch of new converts. But for the most part, if you are a progressive journalist or commentator, you have all these places that can catch you career-wise, whether it's leftist mainstream publications or you can just go work for MSNBC as a commentator. So you're kind of siloed to the world of like corporate, sort of mainstream, milquetoast, a largely neutered commentary. Mm-hmm. You don't really have a reason to flourish on YouTube. The right has been forced to go there. So Steven Crowder, the guy that harassed me, was originally a Fox News contributor and then got fired from Fox News for not being very good at his job and then got hired by The Blaze Media, which is Glenn Beck, who was also fired from Fox News' media enterprise. And then he got his YouTube show. Mm-hmm. So now they have to exist on YouTube, where YouTube is essentially just like linking them up with corporate sponsors of their own and then also getting them tons of money through things like Patreon or side gigs.
But it's lucrative. People like Steven Crowder.
Tremendously lucrative. They are making a lot more money than I imagine I will be making for a very long time.
So you've got this, obviously, this real problem with mainstream media. What can the mainstream learn from what's happening on YouTube, either on the left or on the right?
I have like an optimistic and a pessimistic version of this answer. My pessimistic version is just that mainstream media is doomed to fail on this platform because the whole idea of mainstream media is that it is defined largely by corporate sponsorships for the most part. If you think about cable news or any of the big establishment legacy medias, they rely on ads. And so their content is almost always going to be less authentic, less real feeling, less accessible to an audience than sort of the more indie-ish creators on the right are. And there is this deeply ingrained idea in traditional media outlets and in mainstream media and in every J school in this country that to be a good journalist means being serious. It means being neutral. I could give you like the whole Chomsky Media Literacy 101 critique of why that idea is dumb and like makes for bad journalism. But in this context, it also makes for YouTube, because when you are a Wolf Blitzer type and you show no emotion about what you're reporting on and have no worldview and are ideologically kind of detached from whatever you're covering, it breeds distrust. It breeds feelings of detachment. People feel like they don't understand you or don't know you. They don't feel particularly compelled to care about what you care about. And so sort of the cost of entry of doing well on YouTube is you have to let go of this idea that you're going to be this like tabula rasa, blank slate, objective journalist and speak like a human. In my intro video, I really went out of my way to say, you know, I am a leftist and like you can expect this from me. And also I want you to know that about me, because if this isn't your cup of tea, you're not going to be persuaded. But if you're curious about it, you might be persuaded. But like, here's my goal. I want you to be a socialist too. I want you to be a Marxist too. I'm going to try my best to like entertain you and persuade you of that idea. And that engenders a kind of trust on the part of the audience.
Carlos Maza, now an independent video producer on YouTube. Thanks so much for joining me, Carlos.
Thanks for having me.
We did reach out to YouTube for comment. As of this airing, they have not responded to that request.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.